morning, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. We have the minutes of the last meeting of April 11th before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Sorry, a little over-eager this morning, I guess. I don't know. Members, we have five items of business, four bills, and one amendment to the budget resolution. And I know that there's a lot going on today, so I want to be respectful of people's time. I'll do the amendment to the budget resolution first. We have the RES 06 resolution before us, and I would move the A1 amendment, which all this does, members, is it basically says that the target for the health care access fund will be zero. It doesn't change anything that we adopted before. It just establishes a zero target for the health care access fund. And I should mention, if people are looking for it, it may have been put in the back of your 3339 folder. So is there discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, could we have someone give us a quick review of the healthcare access fund and what a zero target means as a
practical matter? I have a general idea that at some point, if we haven't spent it down, then the tax drops a certain percentage, and I'm not sure whether that tax adjustment would be this year or next year. I think we all know it phases out in 2019, mm-hmm. As far as collecting the tax is concerned, but then the fund goes on for some period after that. So if the tax were to drop, I'm just interested in what that means as a practical impact long term.
Sure.
If we were to have a zero target, I think it would be good to have that explanation from maybe Mr. Marks, or I don't know if Mr. Berg is here too, because he tracks that, with Health and Human Services.
Mr. Marks, could you give us a response on that?
Mr. Chair, members, a couple parts to the question. The current status of the Health Care Access Fund, as of the February forecast, there's a balance projected of $463 million at the end of fiscal 16, so this June 30th, a balance of $610 million projected for the end of fiscal 17. The 609 includes the 463. It's growing at that point, so it's a cumulative number. According to the February forecast, that balance would grow to $877 million in fiscal 18 and $1,166 million in fiscal 19. So, and all of those are cumulative numbers. So the second number includes the first number, the third number includes the first two, and so on. So that's the status of the fund. As far as a zero target proposed in this resolution would mean the net spending in fiscal 16 and 17 will not change under the proposed target. Money could move from fiscal 16 to 17 or vice versa. It could move from one appropriation to another, so there could be a minus, something could be reduced and something increased in the healthcare access fund, but the total number cannot change as far as this proposed resolution. Then the issue with the tax reductions, the tax reduction, or the calculation there, actually compares revenue to the fund minus spending and transfers from the fund, and it's if the balance in any individual year after revenue, after transfers and spending are subtracted from revenue, is greater than, I believe it's 125% of the revenue number, then there is the tax is reduced by the amount that exceeds 125%. According to the calculations based on the current forecast, there would be no tax reduction in 2017, but there would be tax reductions in 2018 and 2019, and I don't have the amounts here with me, but I would caution again, that's based on the current forecast. revenues and spending could change in the next forecast, but based on the current numbers, there would be tax reductions in 18 and 19. That's calculated at the time of the forecast.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks, we don't really know then how far that, let's say in 19, if it were at $1.2 billion under current projections, how far that would carry us into the future in terms of the fund before it's totally spent down. Am I looking at that correctly?
Mr. Marks.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we don't have good numbers past the end of fiscal 19 because that's as far as the forecast goes. The tax expires, the provider tax would expire on December 31st of 2019, which is halfway through fiscal 20. The way the collections occur, and we looked at these numbers, because the money actually comes into the fund after the time period, I believe fiscal 20 still gets, I think it's in the 70 to 80% range of the revenue because of the lag in the collections. So fiscal 20 would get most of its revenue yet, even though the tax expires in the middle of that fiscal year, and then there'd be no revenue from in fiscal 21. So, but no, I don't know how long the balance would carry us.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I was interested in that was a good explanation on the revenue side. The expenditure side then is what's a little bit gray in terms of what the impact of a potential provider tax would be when we look at it long term.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. I just think it's important for people to understand what current law says. Current law says this tax is going away. There is no revenue from this tax after December 31st of 2019. So people can speculate about future future legislatures changing that or raising other taxes. But I think there's this sort of mythical common knowledge among the chattering class that this is somehow going to get extended by the wave of a magic wand or something, and that we can spend that money into the future and, in fact, increase it and spend it in more ways and actually increase the taxes in the future. And that simply ain't the case. The law says that that thing goes away. And I think it would be prudent for people and policymakers to understand that we got to figure out how to pay for stuff without that moving forward, because that's what the law says.
Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if Representative Dean was addressing me or just the committee generally because of my questions. I understand that it's hard to predict future legislative sessions, and I know well what current law is, that it expires 2019. But there would conceivably, unless there are changes, be a fund balance, as we just learned at the end of 2020, when the taxes, as Mr. Marks said, is fully collected. And there is in the law, as I understand it then, and as you and I talked yesterday, in fact, in the retiring room, then at some point there would be a reduction in the tax if you haven't done what I'll call the spend down. And I was just interested in what the long-term impact of that would be. And as Mr. Mark said, and I think as Representative Dean pointed out, that it's hard to predict the future that far out. But thank you.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I just want to add to the conversation just to remind people that the Healthcare Access Fund is primarily the source of support for our Minnesota Care program. And last night in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, Representative Zerwas was extolling how well we did in healthcare before the Affordable Care Act. And I just want people to understand that that's basically because of this tax, that we've had a very robust healthcare system because people in Minnesota were willing to pay for it. And this is how it was put in place. I am, you know, this is not there have always been sort of philosophical issues with this particular tax and the way that it's been collected, and certain kinds of providers have had more trouble with it than others, but it has fulfilled a very important purpose. But, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to ask a question about, you know, what the intention is with setting a zero target, because when we set the budget resolution in this committee, I asked whether there was a target for the Health Care Access Fund, and the answer was no. And obviously, since then, a decision's been made to set one. And so I guess I'd just like to know what the intention is there, why the committee, or why you, Mr. Chair, or somebody on the committee's decided to ask to have this changed and set a target of zero now after, obviously, some further thought on it.
Well, Representative Liebling, I guess I would just say that from my standpoint, when I first brought it forward, I think, you know, the governor has proposed spending, I think it's $540 million of the Health Care Access Fund, and I, in bringing forward the original resolution, really just wanted to set the general fund targets for the committees, and, you know, I was still thinking, and I think other people were still thinking about whether it made sense to do something with the Health Care Access Fund, but thinking about it further and getting to the point where we now need to be passing the bills out of committee, I guess I felt that, you know, I don't think that we should be taking $500 million out of the Health Care Access Fund like the governor is proposing to spend on things that are really, in many cases, not even related to health care. And so it made sense to establish a zero target. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you for that explanation, Mr. Chair. And I think, you know, I generally agree. We shouldn't be taking that money and using it for things that are not health care or, you know, I mean, the purpose of the fund was set, and it's always, you know, troubling when it gets used even within healthcare for things that it wasn't intended for. But I think the governor's proposal was actually a lot. I don't know what you're referring to that wasn't healthcare that he was proposing, but I know a lot of what he was proposing or is proposing is, in fact, for healthcare. And so the House GOP obviously has decided that, you know, to spend a net of $2 million out of our $900 million budget surplus, at least in the areas that are in front of us here. And I would just think that, you know, that there might be a need for some flexibility in the Health and Human Services area. So, you know, I guess in this first round, as the bills are being passed, it'll be interesting to see how all the needs are going to be met or attempt to be met within the committee, having this zero target for health and for the Health Care Access Fund, as well as a zero target for the whole committee. Because we've been hearing bill after bill after bill that really show that the state has very real needs in the area of health and human services. We were not able to meet all the needs last session, and many of the things that people are asking to do are very legitimate, and I think there's a widely shared understanding that things need to be done, needs need to be met. And so it's just really disappointing to see this, and it'll be interesting to see how you all resolve some of these issues that we have. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't happen to have the governor's budget with me, and it's been a while since I looked at what his proposal was. Is there anybody that could tell us, in light of your comments, because my recollection was that he was using that for health care-related programs, but my memory might be a little bit vague on that, but in light of what Representative Liebling was saying, might be helpful so we know what road we're on here, to know what the difference there is then in terms of the governor using the money for health care as opposed to other things. I see staff is kind of scrambling there a little bit to see what they can find out. But if you don't mind, if we could give them a second to see if somebody could answer that question.
Yeah, I guess while they're looking for it, I know that I think that it would be fair to say the majority of the $540 million the governor is taking has been spent on healthcare-related items, although not necessarily healthcare-related items that were meant to have provider tax money spent on them underneath the terms of the tax as it was originally proposed. But there is some portion that is being spent on other things. And I guess are you ready, Mr. Marks? Go ahead, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, the items in the governor's budget include refinancing medical assistance for adults without children. That's $4.7 million in 16, $51 million in 17, and grows to over $100 million in 18 and 19. There's a 5% primary care and mental health rate increase that's $4 million in 17 and then grows to $11 to $12 million in 18 and 19. A small federal compliance item that's $425,000. Several other small items, including a health care delivery study at $500,000. And the others are under $1 million as well. And then one other major item is it's labeled update the value of the provider and premium tax expansion transfer that's in current law. It's a transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund to the General Fund, and that's $74 million a year beginning in 2017. These changes, as Representative Knobloch had mentioned, add up to $548 million over the four-year period, over 16, 17, 18, and 19.
So, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, that list very quickly sounded to me like it's related to health care. Nothing jumped out, in my mind at least, that wasn't health care. You might go back, I suppose, and debate the original intent, perhaps, but is there anything, maybe if I could ask Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks, is there anything on that list that doesn't somehow fit into health care?
Well, Mr. Marks, maybe I think what Representative Carlson is asking, you've identified the $548 million sort of where of the justifications for the money for the governor, but how much additional spending is the governor proposing for health care in his budget? Do you have that figure?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to look at the general fund portion of that. I don't have handy.
Okay, if you could look that up. I wanna say it's $350 million, but anyway, if you could look for that. And I know Representative Druskowski had a question. Do you still want to make a comment, sir?
I'll save my comments for later, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Dean.
Representative Chairman Knobloch and representatives. I think that setting the target at zero is a good and prudent decision, particularly based on the governor's budget. The governor is proposing current and future uses for the Health Care Access Fund into the bienniums after he's into the future beyond his term. And I believe that that's irresponsible because this is a revenue source that's going away, and we're funding a, if you just look at the year-over-year spending out of Medicaid in our expansion, and that's the part of our budget that's blowing up. So if we have a source that's going away and we're relying on it more for uses that are escalating in the future, that's irresponsible. We have one of the TV shows I like is Arrested Development. There's a patriarch who goes to jail. He's an entrepreneur, and he has a number of businesses. And one of the businesses he has is a banana stand, and where they sell banana smoothies. And his over time, he was corrupt, and he put money in the banana stand over and over and over, and he had hundreds of thousands of dollars stuck in the banana stand. And his kids would come to visit him in jail, and he would say, "There's always money in the banana stand." And the kids never really understood what that meant, that there was cash in the banana stand. And so one of the kids lit it on fire and later found out that that's what happened. But this is kind of our banana stand, the Healthcare Access Fund. We continually go to this. It's off books. It's over to the side. It doesn't affect our spreadsheets, and it's inappropriate. And we need to get rid of the banana stand if we're going to be fiscally prudent in the future. And I would just point out some non-healthcare related spending out of the Healthcare Access Fund. The Paul Bunyan ads, about $4 million proposed to spend on Minsure advertising in this biennium, and $4 million for outreach, $8 million total. we're spending on outreach and Paul Bunyan advertising. So I don't think all of that is probably the best, most direct use for health care if we look at the real needs of Minnesotans. And we need to do that. So I think the zero target makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons.
Excuse me.
What's that?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that Mr. Marks was kind of occupied and probably didn't hear
I think Mr. Marks is ready now, if that's what you're asking.
He's ready. I actually wanted him to, I wanted to ask him about something that Representative Dean just said, but I know he didn't get to hear what Representative Dean said. So maybe Mr. Marks could go ahead with what he has, and then then I'll distract him with the next thing after he does that.
All right. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, for the general fund spending, and right now this is fiscal year 16 and 17, I'll start at the top and break this down a bit, but Health and Human Services total is $143 million. $11 million of that's in the Department of Health, and given the labels I have here, it's a little hard to say whether it's health care or not, but... And then, so the Department of Human Services is $132 million. Of that $132 million in the Department of Human Services, $96 million is in state-operated services, which is the Security Hospital, the Enterprise Services, and then a category called Mental Health Services. And some of that is most likely health care. So it's a little hard to break that down. The grant programs themselves, things like medical assistance and so on, are $17 million, or about $18 million total there. So those are the 16-17 numbers in healthcare. Obviously, I haven't said the 18-19 numbers, and the 548 number was a four-year number, so I'm mixing things up a little bit here. But
do you have the 18-19 number total?
Mr. Chair, I do. The total for 18 and 19, the increase would be $417 million. 45 of that is, I'm sorry, 48 of that's in the Department of Health, and $171 million of that is in state-operated services with kind of the same qualifiers as before. And then $93 million is in the grant programs and $79 million in the forecasted programs, so there are a number of bigger increases built into 18-19 than in 16 and 17.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Marks, for that. What I wanted to ask you about, Representative Dean made a statement just now, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it, but I, depending on him to correct me if I get it wrong, but he was talking about money that was spent from the Healthcare Access Fund on, he was talking about on outreach for MNsure, Paul Bunyan ads, things like that, and he said it was $8 million. I don't know what time period he was talking about, but you know, it's my contention, just to tell you, you know, where I'm going with this. We've had this discussion before, and there is money that was appropriated in the last conference committee report. It's not labeled MNsure, but it was money that it started out labeled MNsure. The money kind of moved around the spreadsheet, and ended up being there was an appropriation that was for DHS, I forget exactly how it was labeled on the spreadsheet, but it was for the technology build-out that's continuing, a lot of which is for DHS programs, for eligibility and that kind of thing. And Representative Dean has said numerous times that there's some kind of inappropriate money. I think he's implied in the past that there's sort of a slush fund that MNsure is kind of dipping without authority into the Healthcare Access Fund. But he just gave a very specific number, and I just wondered if you can, as our spreadsheet person here, if you can, if you could react to that. And maybe Representative Dean would like to kind of say it again so that you can hear it from without my spin and bias on it. But I just would like to see if there is in the spreadsheet or if there's any, if you can show or know, tell me if indeed there is $8 million coming out of the Healthcare Access Fund for Paul Bunyan ads and anything else for Minshew purposes.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't know that. I would have to do more checking to, I don't know that offhand.
Representative Dean, did you have some more information on that?
Sure. The appropriation, we did have a lengthy committee hearing on this, and we had presentations from MMB where I asked for the history of appropriations and tracking in Healthcare Access Fund and Minshew, and we went over the expenditures from Minshew out of the Healthcare Access Fund, and we asked for the legislative authority to access those funds. The specific line items that I reference are dealing with the Minshew communications portion of their budget, $4 million in $4 million in marketing and $4 million in network outreach, both of which according to the testimony in the committee, use healthcare access funds for that without a statutory appropriation, but with the use of interagency agreements, which I am going to be addressing with specific legislation that is currently up, I believe, today.
Representative Poe.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in kind of kicking this discussion off, it seemed to be the justification for a zero target was that some of the money was not being used for healthcare-related expenditures. You know, in the legislature, when you get down to the discussion of how the money is spent, we always have those discussions, and it's still not clear to me with Dean's comment about the advertising, whether that's a part of the 548 or if that's some history he was tracing with the interagency agreements. But be that as it may, there wasn't anything in my mind that jumped out that was not healthcare related. You can debate about the expenditure of the 548, but what the zero target does is it takes all of that off the table. And maybe there would be some items in there that, you know, our side of the aisle might have a different viewpoint than the governor. I do know that the Healthcare Access Fund under the previous administration kicked off quite a debate because the governor at that time was proposing that there be expenditures that were, in my view, totally unrelated to healthcare, and it got the healthcare community very turned up on that because they felt that, and some of them don't necessarily endorse the tax and have debated that for years, but they argued that as long as the tax was in place that it should be used for healthcare. And you can have that kind of a debate. So there has been a history from your side of the aisle. The previous governor, Governor Pawlenty, did propose using the money or some of it quite differently than it was geared for historically. But I wasn't asking to endorse the entire 548. I was expressing concern that it takes it completely off any of those expenditures from the Healthcare Access Fund off the table. And it sounded to me like there are a number of things there that I personally would endorse. I can't speak for our entire caucus, but some of those I would need to learn more about, and I don't happen to these days serve on the Health and Human Services Committee, even ex officio. So I would have to rely on the work of that committee and our people that are on the committee as well to determine the pro and con of the different items in the 548. But zero does take it off the table. That's the concern that I'm expressing.
All right. Representative Dean?
I think if you can look back, obviously, into the last administration, if you like, and I can send out members of the committee non-healthcare spending or how the healthcare access fund is actually used. It's, I think there's 17 different ways that we spend the money within the fund currently, and I'll send those out to folks so you have them. But just to respond to Representative Carlson's comment about the previous administration, and we do that a lot around here, I just say that there's always been money in the banana stand, and that's been a problem.
All right, members, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A1 budget resolution amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. All right, members, we have is Representative Keel here. Representative Keel, we're going to start with House File 2946 is next on the agenda. Then we'll take up Representative Eklund's bill. Members, I'll move that House File 2946 be referred to the General Register. Representative Keel, welcome back to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2946 regarding National Guard members that serve in the Minnesota National Guard but happen to reside outside the Minnesota borders. And it basically what it does is allow them to purchase a Minnesota fishing or hunting license at the Minnesota rate.
And Representative Keel, I note under the fiscal note there's 1,058 Guard members who are actually non-resident members. Are they, where are they? Do they live like in North Dakota or border communities then?
Yeah, basically, yes, yes. And they looked up the number. And then, of course, that's assuming that they all would be seeking license. I'm guessing not everybody would be. And I think sometimes they just have to reside in the community because of job requirements.
Okay. Discussion to the bill. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Keel, for bringing that to the committee here. And I would probably assume that if we pass that tax bill that many of them might end up moving to Minnesota and living here, too. So.
Other discussion to House File 2946. Seeing no discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 2946 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2946 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Keel.
Thank you, members. Mr. Chair.
Next on the agenda is House File 3339. Chair will move House File 3339 be referred to the General Register. Representative Eklund, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. Mr. Chair, there is also an A1 amendment that cleans the language up a little bit.
All right. That's right. I recall that this is, as I recall, members, looking at the A1 amendment, a technical amendment. And members, I'll move the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, House File 3339 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill just is what I thought was a simple bill to start out with. People that buy the lifetime hunting and fishing licenses currently have to go into a bait store or someplace and renew every year, get the new little blue tab to push out that they can do it. So I thought I'd introduce this bill to allow it to be put on the driver's license or the Minnesota ID card, and then they wouldn't have to do that, and they'd be all have proof of their license at all times, Mr. Chair.
Members, discussion to House File 3339 as amended. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have a question about this. Representative Eklund, if you know, if we get the real ID thing straightened out so that we have, you know, we're under different rules, how will that interact with this idea? Will that still be permissible?
Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I believe it would be. We've had some of the discussion on that as just having some kind of symbol on the license that proves that you have that license. So I would assume the real ID issue would cover that too.
Other discussion. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3339, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3339, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Next up, we have Representative Petersburg. Chair will move that House File 2014 be referred to the General Register. Representative Petersburg, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is is really set for what I think is due process opportunity for when I look at government agencies and the ability that they have with to put the full weight of the state behind them. Oftentimes, businesses and individuals sometimes lose the ability to have a third-party review and have some appeal process for their decisions. In this particular bill, the bill is designed to, when a person or a business applies for a permit for a driveway through the Department of Transportation, and they're denied, there really was no basis for them to appeal. Since the bill was dropped last year, the department has reworked its internal process for the appeals process, and they have really, I think, streamlined it and has made it a little bit clearer for the average person and the business to know exactly what the parameters are for it. But it falls short of that third-party independent review of the appeal by maintaining that the final decision shall be the a district engineer making that decision. So whereas I think they've helped and I think they really have will eliminate a lot of the concerns they have, this bill really just allows for that due process to be able to go that the individual would have to go into the district court in order to have that decided. And that's pretty much the bill in the nutshell. It's really about due process and what people have the availability to afford themselves.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I have any real opposition to this other than the department does have an ombudsman. I think I got it right the second time. What happens to that role then if this law passes? Do they still have that available to work out disputes? I don't know if MDOT is here to comment. I'm not sure just how that changes current practices where they do have a person in the department that attempts to work between the department and the citizen.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Carlson, for that question. My understanding is that when they reviewed the process from before, they felt the ombudsman's program hadn't worked as well as they would like, and that was the reason why, starting, I believe, in October, they started working on a revised process for the review and appeals process. So they have now put in place and are going to have it, not yet, but they said soon they will have it actually put in their rules of how the appeals process will work, but it is no longer going through the ombudsman's program according to what their general rules are that they have put in place.
Mr. Chairman, so in other words, there won't be a person that would be the ombudsman for the department any longer if the bill passes, or is that happening under the department's rulemaking anyway?
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. My understanding is that it was just for this particular appeals process that is running for the driveway access permits and others, that the ombudsman program may still be available for other programs and other issues that are out there. So I don't believe they discontinued the ombudsman program, but only that they have streamlined this because they realized that it wasn't fulfilling the needs that were there, and they extend that.
Mr. Chair, is the department
Representative Carlson?
If I don't think it would take
representative
long to
here?
Answer that question as to what happens if the law passes relative to the ombudsman currently.
Sure.
And if they don't have anybody prepared to, then we'll just let it drop.
Okay. Yeah, if there's someone from the department that could testify to that, please step forward. And, sir, could you identify yourself for the record and state your name for the tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. Yeah, the ombudsman is still in place, and the ombudsman is still an option for people who are wishing to dispute the original decision of the department regarding the driveway access permit. We have the appeals process in place, which can be pursued beyond whatever the ombudsman determines or recommends in the case of a dispute as well. So both pieces are available to businesses or individuals who think that they're...
And, Mr. Chairman, I think that answers the question, then. It doesn't really cancel, if you will, current practice, then. So that's what I was interested in finding out. Thank you.
Okay. Representative, I've got Representative Hornstein, Hillstrom, and then Liebling. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we heard this bill in transportation a couple of weeks ago, and I have some concerns about it, you know, primarily around the you know, possible increase in litigation that this may engender. You know, I see that on the fiscal note we have part of a position you know, dedicated to this, which, you know, it may be more administrative, but Representative Petersburg, have you quantified or have any sense of cost to the state if we're, you know, getting involved in you know, more expert witnesses or tort liability or things of that, access rights from the landowner? It seems like there may be some costs to the state that aren't included in the fiscal note.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. The only quantitative information that we have is provided by the Department of Transportation on assumptions on how many may go through the appeals process. On the other hand, we know that for a lot of businesses who are looking at installing driveways in businesses, they want to know up front what the costs are, and they oftentimes may pursue other locations. So I believe that simply because they have streamlined the appeals process and made it clear as to what the parameters are of making the decisions on driveways, that will actually reduce the amount of appeals, but we don't have any quantitative information as to what it might do. I also know that the department has a budget item for legal actions, and most projects have legal contingency funds in it as well. So my expectation is that there will be and could be some, but I don't think it's going to be exorbitant. What we're hearing from business is that probably could be as many as two or three a year that might go through this particular appeals process compared to the normal processes.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is maybe a question for MnDOT. So if one of these cases actually goes through the appeals process, will that hold up the project during the pendency of that appeal, or will you go forward and then have to redo the road based on that decision? And then how long of a time frame do you think it would take to make a decision if you are going to hold up the road construction project to actually get a decision?
Mr. Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hillstrom. You know, I don't know how long a process this takes. I do have someone from the MnDOT's chief counsel office who might have a better idea how long these court cases can take. But if the driveway access dispute is related to a construction project, it could easily delay the start of that project, because we wouldn't want to construct a project that we'd have to go back and take some mitigating action to correct. But Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, can I have Dave Sure. Sawyer come down from our chief counsel's office?
Hello, sir. Welcome to Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Sikora, and I'm Associate Legal Counsel at MnDOT. And the court process, this would be a trial, so we expect it would last as long as any other civil case. There's discovery, the trial itself, and then a potential appeal. And a normal court case can take months, conceivably extend into more than a year, 2 years for the entire process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that would hold up an entire project, potentially, or most likely?
If the access issue is connected to a highway construction project, then it could delay the process. The individual who owns the property may seek to delay the project so that it is, in fact, the access resolved before the project goes forward.
Final question.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the state has had a policy to move to towards zero-death strategy to reduce crashes, and we've seen in my community they have to reconstruct the road because we had the most crashes along Brooklyn Boulevard. So my question is, does this change the liability or the evaluation that the state is going to do in constructing these projects? Are we going to move away from the towards zero-death policy and change what we look at and actually have things ordered that might not necessarily actually improve state public safety?
Mr. Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, we are very concerned that this will increase liability for the state and the potential for more crashes. Currently, we really deny very few access permits. It's about 2% that we deny. So those are the ones that have the most serious concerns for potential for crashes as traffic goes in and out of that particular driveway. The message of this bill is to reduce the discretion that the engineers have in evaluating these and to grant more of these permits that are very questionable and of concern for safety. And then if there is a crash, we are concerned that what this will do is take away the state's immunity from liability and put it into a situation where we could be subject to tort claims under the State Tort Claims Act.
Representative Quarles, did you have a question to this?
To this point, we heard this bill in public safety, and MnDOT's really pulling out the kitchen sink here to stop it. This wasn't their testimony in my committee, and they were asked specifically about liability, and they said liability would always go where it usually does, towards the actor, not the state, just because they put in a different driveway. So this is pretty ridiculous to me. It's a good bill. The DNR and MnDOT have both shown that they need some fresh eyes instead of their own ombudsman in these cases, and I really support this bill and hope we would pass it through. And the court cases, there's an access to court cases on these things anyway that could tie it up for months. This is nothing new. This has always been one of the pieces in the game. And if there isn't, maybe that's an extra special reason to have an avenue like this. So I hope we would vote for this bill.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I would just like to clarify a few things. Oftentimes when we think about project, we think about MnDOT projects, but some of these projects are also development projects by businesses that are now asking for a new driveway that wasn't in existence before. So in those particular situations, they aren't going to move forward with any kind of project unless they know they have the access. So that eliminates that piece. And with all things, liability is certainly of a concern, but we all need to take responsibility for our own actions. And I believe that the bill is a good bill and stands on its own. So thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted to ask, I see that this is all money that would come out of the Trunk Highway Fund. I guess that's for MnDOT to handle its side of things. And I just wanted to ask, am I correct in noting that there is no target for the Trunk Highway Fund, right? So if anybody can manage to fit their expenditures in there, why, it's no problem spending $200,000 in fiscal 17 and then $200,000 in each of 18 and 19. So there's no, Mr. Chair, could you just confirm, or maybe Mr. Marks, there's no target for the Trunk Highway Fund, right?
We have set no target for the Trunk Highway Fund, that's correct. Although, of course, there are constitutional restrictions on what the money can be used for.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess then I just would like to note that even though there's no target, that, of course, when you take money out of the Trunk Highway Fund, you're competing against highway projects. This is gas tax money and some other money, but, you know, this is what people are paying gas taxes for, assuming that the money is going to be used to work on the transportation system. So we have something a little bit parallel here, I think, to what we were talking about with the Healthcare Access Fund, that it's for a certain purpose, that it does get kind of used for a little here and a little there on other things that aren't maybe strictly speaking transportation. But I just would say that I think most people would be kind of surprised to see this money used for this. Maybe I'm wrong, because I don't generally do transportation. I'm not all that familiar with it. And if I am wrong, please let me know. But I don't know. It just seems to me that using trunk highway money for this purpose is, you know, probably not the best.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. You know, that is something that the Department of Transportation deals with legal issues all the time. For example, just down in my area, there was a large legal disruption in regards to a turnback situation. And so part of the transportation system is also verifying and dealing with the legal issues that various agencies or other government entities provide, and the state has to defend itself in regards to that. So this is just one other avenue of legal responsibility that the Department of Transportation has, just like all agencies do in supporting their decisions and what they do. So I don't see this as a real issue. The concern is also we don't know that it's going to cost $200,000. That's just the assumptions made. If we have no appeals process in a particular year, then there is no cost, and then those funds stay there. This is really an area where you need to look at what are our legal responsibilities, and is the department as well as the state responsible for some additional due process that allows a third party to be able to look at some of the decisions that are made so that they aren't just arbitrary or for the ease of a particular district. We just think that this is an opportunity for, if it needs to go and it's that important a project, it needs to have that third review.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Petersburg, I don't disagree with you on that part of it. You know, it does seem kind of reasonable to me that you should be able to go to a court if you need to do that. But I just, from time to time, I've gotten complaints about people will write to me and tell me that the Trunk Highway Fund is not being used for roads and bridges. And especially when there's a question out there, which there is, about whether we should raise gas tax and, you know, how we're going to fund our needs around the state. And then when then people's trust in all of that, we know that the gas tax gets dedicated to this fund through the Constitution, and we say to our constituents, well, don't worry, because it is going where we say it's going, and then, no, it really isn't going where we say it's going. So it just, I don't know, it's just, it's hard then to give people a straight answer when they complain about that, because... Yeah, I get it. It is related to transportation, just like a lot of the things we spend the Healthcare Access Fund on are. They are related to healthcare. They may not be the original thing that was intended, but, gee, this sure isn't either. So I guess there's just nobody's peer around here, I guess. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just, you know, there's one point that I wanted to emphasize that I heard in the testimony, and that is, you know, MnDOT said that, you know, they've denied 20 out of 1,000 permits. So, you know, that's 2%, and it just seems like a solution in search of a problem with some risks in terms of costs to the state, you know, the liability questions that have been raised. So, you know, for that reason, I would just encourage folks to vote no. I think, as Representative Liebling said, I mean, sometimes we react to things when there's not necessarily a huge problem that has to be addressed. And with unknown fiscal costs, I think it's a risk.
Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe everything should have an appeals process. But you have, I don't understand why you chose de novo review in a district court rather than a contested case hearing, since most agency decisions go through the contested case process, which is designed to be faster and cheaper. So you've chosen the much longer and more expensive process, and I don't get that.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McVinius. I think that was a process that we felt was had the most finality to it, rather than with the possibility of going to a further appeals court and so forth beyond that. I think that's just one of the ways. You're right, it could have gone the other way as well. This is just the choice that we made at the time.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, that seems like an odd argument to me, because an appeal from a contested case would go to the Court of Appeals, and from the district court would go to the Court of Appeals. So it's going to go to the same appellate court afterward anyway, since this is de novo. So the other thing I look at is you've put in here clear and convincing evidence in a de novo district court case, which tells me you're going to make it even more expensive and slower. So while I like the idea of an appeal, this is the wrong direction. It should be a contested case. It shouldn't put in the level of evidence. I mean, this is like you're making it more difficult for the people you say you want to help, and I don't understand that. So I'm going to vote no, not that I disagree with an appeals process. I like appeals, but this is expensive and slow.
Representative Petersburg, any other comments?
Thank you for hearing this bill, and I believe it is a due process piece, and if there are amendments out there, I'd be willing to at least look at them. So thank you.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, Chair will renew his motion that House File 2014 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Okay, members, the last bill we've got on the calendar of the day is House File 2528. Representative Hackbarth moves that House File 2528 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. This is the David Dill Memorial Trail. We're designating some existing trail and renaming it the David Dill Memorial Trail. And the reason we're before this committee is because we need some money for signage. And we're directing the DNR to design and sign these trails. And we're taking $10,000 from the snowmobile dedicated account and $10,000 from the ATV dedicated account to pay for the trail, for the signage of the trails.
Representative Hackbarth, how long is the trail, the portion that will be the David Dill Trail?
The trail runs all the way from International Falls all the way over to the North Shore Trail, which is maybe 200 miles, something like that.
All right. Representative Carlson?
No, Mr. Chairman, I was just commenting to myself that that's a significant trail then if it goes 200 miles. So it's a nice memorial to a member that was very interested in trails and outdoor issues. So I would endorse this bill.
Well, it is, and I certainly endorse it too. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, how many miles up the trail will be the David Dill Memorial Trail?
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, it's going to be approximately 200 miles. It runs all the way from International Falls to the North Shore Trail.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, I think I don't understand then. It already has a name, doesn't it?
Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, yes, there's a number of trails that have a number of different names along the route. It's spelled out in the bill which of those trails we're renaming the David Dill Memorial Trail. There's a number of different trails along the route.
And then
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, then the smaller segments of it that already have names will continue to have that name in that area. And then the overall trail is the David Dill Memorial Trail?
Representative Hackbarth.
Chairman, Representative Murphy, that's exactly correct.
Okay. And those,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, and those small smaller area trails that are already named, they have no opposition to the overall trail being named the David Dill Memorial Trail.
Representative Hackbarth.
Members and Representative Murphy, no. No one is in opposition to that at all. They're all on board with renaming it the David Dill Memorial Trail.
Thank you.
And Representative Hackbarth, so if it starts in International Falls, I'm trying to look at the bill, does it end on the North Shore Trail around Two Harbors? Is that what I'm reading here? Do you know? Or do you know where the end would, of it would be on the North Shore Trail?
I thought it was around Little Marais.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, it looks like it could come down to Two Harbors and go up to Little Marais, yeah, too. I couldn't quite understand it by reading. So, okay.
So all right. DJ Rams did North
Trail. All right. Other discussion to the bill? Well, seeing none, members, I certainly would encourage your support for this in naming it for a very esteemed member that we're all sad to have lost. Members, I'm proud to renew my motion that House File 2528 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2528 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you. Thank you.
And with that, members, I'm about to adjourn the meeting. I'm expecting we will have a meeting on Monday at our regular time, and we're probably going to be taking up the claims bill then, among other bills that we'll put on the calendar. And I sat in on the claims committee last night. I just want to encourage people to look at the claims bill, and all of you, I think, were here except for me for the exoneration bill discussion in 2014. This would be the first time that we are actually taking up exoneration bills as part of the claims bill. And so to some extent, we might be setting some precedents on that. And there are, you know, a number of issues relating to that that we haven't dealt with in a claims bill before. So I guess I just want to encourage people to look those over. If, in fact, that is what we schedule for Monday, which I would expect it would be. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, and when you passed the budget resolution the other day, you indicated $2 million on the bottom line. And this one will take, if it's passed, then it's about $1.75 million of it, or pretty
about
close.
About 1.8 with everything 1.8. Else they put in. Yep.
The other question I have, being that we won't meet until next Monday, have you come out yet with a timeline and when the various omnibus bills are going to be, supplemental bills coming into committee? And then you indicated that you'd probably be merging those into two or three potential bills. So what is the timeline in terms of when those bills will be before this committee, and when you'll be aligning them up into the two or three or whatever you ultimately decide will be the supplemental? Assuming you're still going to have multiple bills.
Representative Carlson, we still are having multiple bills, but in terms of the aggregation of some bills into each other, we honestly really haven't decided that yet. And I guess I would expect that we'll be having Ways and Means meeting quite a bit next week. I think underneath the rules have to have all of those bills passed by Thursday the 21st. I would expect we'll likely be meeting Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but I don't have a schedule for you yet as to which bills would be up on which days.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chairman, from your comment, you haven't decided which...
No, I haven't, but I will tell you as soon as I know. I honestly haven't decided, Representative.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask, Mr. Chairman, the question is I know the timeline we're on, and that's why I was wondering what the next week looked like relative to those bills. So,
yeah, I'll try to get you some information on that, you know, certainly in a timely manner.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further questions or discussion, the meeting is adjourned.